Good afternoon and welcome to the Internet of Things session. My name is Paul Foster and I'm joined by Robert Hogg from Black Marble. Hello, Robert.
Hello.
So we're going to talk about the Internet of Things. We're going to look at the technologies involved and we're going to look at a specific solution. Robert, can you give us more detail?
So first of all, we'll be looking at your house, which is a lovely house, and the kind of things you'll be doing there. And then we're going to try and move on from that to actually look at not just gathering data, but then pulling the data together, then analysing that data, and then actually giving people insight into what data actually means.
Excellent. So let's start with an overview of IoT. So Robert, what is IoT?
Actually, Paul, that's a really good question. There isn't a standard definition. There's lots of opinions on the matter. So what we're going to present is our view of where IoT is right now. It's subject to change, and take your own interpretation, but we'll try our best for this. So what we have is, right now across the world, there are millions and millions and billions of devices, but they're all not necessarily connected or accessible. So what we have is lots of bits of data, which are all separate. That's called siloed data. And then there are lots of proprietary solutions that hold them. Now, this isn't a knock at the manufacturers, this is a more of a legacy problem where we might have a building management system that has lots of data, we just can't get to it. And then we've actually got problems around, certainly say with these kind of devices where a device might get knocked out of service, or we might have quality issues, we've got data accuracy, and that sort of thing. So there's a general set of problems with devices and using those devices as is. But more importantly, we've actually got a follow-on problem, which is data without context and knowledge is actually genuinely meaningless. If I get a number that says 21 degrees, is that 21 degrees in Bradford? Is it 21 degrees in Cairo? You know, those have very different meanings. Are we inside? Are we inside? So a lot of people miss this with IoT, that you've actually got to get context to the data itself. There is a perception that certainly in corporates that small devices aren't very interesting. You know, they're just not meaningful. Sort of a CXO board style, people might not look at them and go, that's not what we're interested in. But if you actually look at the outcomes of IoT, the analytics, when we started talking and saving thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds a year, for a business to become a lot more interesting. So the developer community is now actually looking at sort of how to present this out. So do think about small, people do focus on the devices. It's not just the devices, it's the whole chain of events which we're talking about today. And then we've also got some issues around if people tamper with data and misuse data, and we'll talk about that a little bit, but not in context. We'll talk at the end about some events we've got coming up, but we'll talk about that in more detail.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting challenge there is that your devices are all out in the wild, and they're therefore out of your control to a certain degree, isn't it?
Exactly, and you know, let's be fair, there's some bad people in the world who will actually see that as a data stream into your business. So obviously, everybody look at this. Great developers will actually validate each step in their process and stop this sort of thing happening. But just in case you don't, you know, we'll talk about strategies on that at a follow-up event.
So, Robert, that's all. You know, that's an interesting definition of IoT. But why should we do IoT?
So I think that it can be broken down into two main reasons. The first one is telemetry. And telemetry has been able to gather all the data from all these sensors, with temperature sensors and humidity and lots of other great bits of information which will give you, be able to generate insight and meaning to that information. And then we can actually use that information to then sort of feed back and produce better targeted products and services in our actual delivery. I think the more intriguing and interesting part of IoT is when we're talking about command and control. And command and control is when we're not just taking information from the devices, but we're then pushing information back to either those devices or other devices in the device chain to affect people's lives in a positive way.
The actuators in the model,
yeah.
If you like.
Yeah. So either temperature sensors and actuators, or humidity and aircon, or wherever it's going to be, we can do a lot of work, but you have to be able to do something with that data before. Connecting devices, sensors straight into actuators gives a very raw grain control, which may or may not work to a great extent. When we talk about IoT, we have that ability to do analysis and work around that information to give insight, and the insight then forms the command and control chain.
Yeah.
This is where IoT really, really gets exciting.
So what do we need to get going?
So, I mean, the key thing to start with, we need connected devices. If a device isn't connected, we can't read the data, let's be fair, there's nothing we can do with it. We'll also talk a bit later on about different strategy of connecting through gateways and that sort of thing. We really need secure connections, and there is a problem where the cheaper the device, the poorer quality of connection, their ability to actually do transport secure data is pretty weak, and we'll talk about ways of maybe dealing with that. And we also want to make sure that the data is accurate. The hard part though is then we need to be able to then aggregate this data and then actually pull the data together. But luckily, I think we've got some strategies for that.
We definitely have some cool tools for that, yep.
So I think the best thing to maybe think about is, what's the ideal scenario? So that's basically called the canonical model that we're going to use for this description. So as you'll see on the left-hand side of the slide, we've actually got a set of different types of devices, and hopefully you see we've been quite inclusive here. So a device could be an application, it could be run on a mobile phone, it could be run on a desktop because it could be user feedback, that sort of thing. It could be legacy devices which have enough intelligence to connect up into the cloud. We could have IP devices that can connect straight into a back-end service. Or we could have real dumb sensors or telemetry gathering devices. Now, interestingly, if you look at sort of just as we're going slightly left, when we're actually talking about collection, some of those devices are actually going to need help. So if you've just got a very raw temperature sensor or humidity sensor, we're going to have to put some kind of device in, which we call a gateway. And the gateway takes those raw feeds, and those could be wired, sort of often various sort of temperature sensors, or wireless, on short haul wireless, gather that data and then route that up to a more intelligent service. We then actually have an ingester service. The ingester service can actually pull in large volumes of data. We'll talk about that in a little while. And obviously we're going to be using Event Hub for this demonstration. It's a great product, scales fantastically well because it's based on Azure. And then from there we can do a variety of things. We can store the data, we can then send it off for analytics, and that's what we're doing inside our demonstration. We can then again from there we can store it again, either the analyzed data or the raw data. And then we want to provide insight. Now, in this model, the insight we can stop there with Power BI, but if you remember previously, we were talking about actually then affecting the result. That data could then be sent back through the Event Hub, back out to the devices to add control as well. But for today, you know, the canonical model we're talking about today is the first one where we're actually going to do an end-to-end delivery of everything.
So I've instrumented my home as part of a project that I'm working on with UK Social Housing. Our goal is to achieve affordable warmth, and we believe we can do that by instrumenting homes to see how the heating systems are running and how they're being used, and then determine whether there are optimizations that can be made. To achieve that, we've put in a variety of sensors. So each room has a temperature sensor on its radiator or its heating device, and an ambient temperature sensor. Then each room has a PIR, a passive infrared sensor, which determines, you know, human movement and activity in the room. That enables us to compute an hourly score of activity for the room. So in conjunction with a temperature sensor on the boiler, which captures the boiler's activity, we should be able to explore where radiators are working inefficiently, where the heating system is programmed to run when it's inappropriate to run, and whether there are things like thermostatic radiator valves that can actually tune the heating of the house so that rooms are heated appropriately for their volume of use. So looking at my home, what I've done is actually instrumented the home with a variety of temperature sensors. And I'm collating that data up through the cloud to Event Hub, where the data is being ingested and directly passed through to the Azure Streaming Analytics Service, where I'm doing a whole series of aggregations and some transformation that enables the data to then present information that's useful to us in our search for achieving affordable warmth through a Power BI dashboard running Power View.
Okay, so what hardware are you using?
Well, I've based the hardware on technology from a local UK company called Wireless Things, and they are producing not just a series of 868 megahertz wireless sensor devices, of which there's a wide variety of different devices that we can use, but we're also using the Wireless Things OpenPi. So OpenPi is a Raspberry Pi compute node based IoT gateway. It enables us to receive the 868 broadcast messages from our various sensors and then actually deliver that information through to Event Hub up into the cloud. So it's got a Wi-Fi or GSM connection in it.
How long do these devices run for? Because I noticed this doesn't take power, it's got a battery.
So basically all of our wireless sensors, so that the temperature sensor that we have here, but also the prototype PIR sensor that I've got here, both run from a battery. The actual temperature sensor runs from a coin battery, a CR2032, and thanks to the proactive sleeping technology that's built into the wireless circuitry here, this can deliver about a million transmissions from that one battery. So depending on what your transmission interval is, whether it's 5 minutes or an hour, we're looking at multiple years from this one sensor. And we're able to drive the volume price point of the wireless circuitry, that's the main part of this sensor, down to a sub-£5 level. So this becomes a very inexpensive sensor with a long lifetime.
Where would people get them from?
So you can go to the Wireless Things website. The interesting thing is that they are an open hardware manufacturer, so they design and build open hardware, so they're publishing all of that circuitry. So you can actually go and acquire the OpenPi and start working as it is, or you can actually take the circuitry, customise the design, and then have it batch manufactured for yourself.
Now, I have to say, I'm sure we shouldn't advertise, but don't they have a Kickstarter starting shortly?
They do. They have a Kickstarter for the OpenPi, and the details are on the bottom of the screen now.
Cool.
So let's take a look at the application running on our OpenPi IoT gateway. We're using the AMQP.NET Lite library, available as a NuGet package or directly from CodePlex, as our transport mechanism from the OpenPi through to Event Hub. The actual application running on the OpenPi is a .NET Framework 4.5 console application running on the Pi using Mono. The program structure is very straightforward. We utilize a dictionary object as our container for the various sensor messages that are received. We run up a background thread that actually listens on the serial port of the wireless radio to receive messages. Basically, the main thread continues it to run, managing our AMQP connection and at set intervals calling out to the get sample and send AMQP message procedure, which we'll jump down to just to see how that works. The key thing here is that we're using the interlocked exchange method to be able to safely pass data from the background thread through to the main thread. Here, interlocked exchange is setting the last data sample, our dictionary, to null, but in that process it returns the original value of the last data sample, which becomes our sample data dictionary. And then we then collate various aspects of the message, setting its properties, including identifying a device ID and an optional partition key for Event Hub. And we actually add additional attributes to the sample data dictionary before adding it to our message body as a binary encoded JSON object. And then very simply we come to the bottom here, where we are able to call the AMQP library to send our message, and we provide a callback so we can take action. We're very simply at the moment just write out success and log our success, or we log an error should that actually fail. Let's just look down at the sample loop. This is handling what's called the LLAP messages from our wireless sensors. They come in a fixed format, which we basically break apart and populate our dictionary object appropriately. So we're setting up the serial port on the Raspberry Pi to listen to the 868 megahertz wireless radio shield that's attached to it. And then we're actually able to move through and perform various validation of the messages that we're receiving. And then basically we're working down here to batch up as many message entries from sensors as possible. So we capture maybe a battery status every 10 transmissions, and we parse that and pass it back up to our handler, and just continue to run in that background loop, recovering should we actually fail. The connection details for our event hub are all handled in a command line parsing, which for my own system security, I'm not going to show you, and they're currently hard-coded in this code base. So I can now show you, if I build this, I can then go to a little application called WinSCP, which enables me to look at what I've got built in a directory on the PC and then actually transfer it to my Raspberry Pi. So I can quite literally grab hold of my new executable and move that across and just initiate a transfer of that to my Raspberry Pi. And for the purposes of debugging, I have a Raspberry Pi that's set up with X-Terminal environment, and I RDP into it, and now you can see that I've got my terminal window up, and I could literally just run my application using Mono. The hardest part about the Mono setup is actually just setting up the Linux certificate store, which isn't done by default, so you need to be able to do that, and you need to be able to do it again when the certificates expire. But what you can see here is that we've got various LLAP messages coming in from PIRs and from temperature settings, and there's a battery reading there. And that's actually being batched up as appropriate and transmitted out to the event hub. And you can see we've got our outcome accepted. So we've now got data moving through from our Raspberry Pi connected to our wireless sensor node through to event hub. Now you can actually get a working scenario to play with from the connectthedots.io site.
So that's wonderful. You know, we've got devices, we've got a house that's fully wired up in a disturbing level of detail. But then we've got a problem, and I'm not sort of a naysayer of the world, but we do have a problem, that we've got quite a large amount of data coming in. You know, we've got variable rates of data, unpredictable bursts, you know, the devices are going to be bursting, but we, with device telemetry, you know, we could be having, a million hits of data an hour, 10 million hits of data an hour, 300 million hits of data an hour, and we have a genuine problem, you know, and we're all great coders. But, you know, building a solution that's going to deal with that kind of data in a timely and manageable fashion is hard. You know, it isn't something you're going to knock out your garden shed quickly. So what we actually need is we need something that's actually going to do that for us in a good way. Luckily, we have a solution, unsurprisingly, based in Azure, which is fantastic. Event Hub is a generation of service bus, specifically been built for IoT style devices, where we can manage large volumes of data of different types. We can also send data back to the devices. We've got a good quality of token based security. It's fast, it's very, very fast. Note, if you actually look at the slide, you'll actually see that we've got two different speeds. We've got less than 10 milliseconds for volatile data, i.e. data you're not going to store, but only 50 milliseconds if you want that data to be durable, which is quite amazing, you know. Let's be fair, most cases people will never notice. So you've actually now got persistent messages which you can then work with as time goes on. And best of, it's cheap. It's remarkably cheap. Let alone, you wouldn't be able to code something in the amount of time, but it's also cheap and deliverable. And it takes, I would like to say seconds to deploy, but we're in minutes to actually have a viable event hub up and running. So let's go ahead and actually show you how to set up an event hub and get one running for the demo. So first of all, we have to create an event hub. It's very simple to do. We select app services, service bus, event hub. We'll do a quick rate for today. We'll call our event hub Tech Days 2015 to remember where it is. We have to wait for the service bus namespace to validate. There we go. Hit create and wait for it to activate. Now our event bus has been set up. We're going to select the namespace, event hubs, select our event hub, and then we're going to configure it. We're going to be setting up a send rule, which will have the permissions of send, and a listen rule, which has the permission of listen. And then we hit save, and we're done. What we now need to do is just quickly go back to our event hub and view our connection strings. So these are the connection strings which will actually allow our application to actually deliver information. So what we need to do is copy and paste those out, and we're pretty much done. So now we're going to build a client for the event hub. What I've got here is a blank console application in C#. So the first thing we're going to do is add a NuGet package to the references. And what we're searching for is Microsoft, there we go, Microsoft Azure Service Bus. And install. Wonderful. What we now need to do is add a using. And we're going to add a using for Microsoft Service Bus messaging. Excellent. Okay, let's just quickly get a bit of space. There we go. So what we now need to do is we now have to put a reference in for the event hub name and the connection string. So I've been a bit cheeky and gone ahead and already typed those up. So you can see it was actually exactly the same text as was delivered in the portal. Paste them in and we're good. So now what we need to do is actually write a bit of code to actually use the connection string in the event hub name to actually send some data. We're going to use GUIDs just as some random data to send, and I've just popped a bit of code up here to do just that. The key pieces here are we have an event hub client which is created from the connection string in the event hub name. And then we have a event hub client where we just send the message, we convert the message into an event data, and then we send it. Nice and easy. So let's see that in action. So all we're going to be doing is doing send messages dot wait. And let's run that to see where we get out. And as expected, we're seeing a GUID being sent roughly every 100 milliseconds, give or take. So that's hopefully a very quick example of actually how to get Event Hub up and running and actually sending messages to Event Hub.
So now we've got our data, we want to do some analytics with it. And we're going to actually use Azure Stream Analytics, or ASA just for short, to actually help us do that processing. So what is Stream Analytics? Well, I like to think of it as, you know, complex event processing. We've got an endless stream of data being delivered to the service. And the service allows us to create a number of jobs that run over that same data, or lots of data, and to be able to do some level of aggregation, you know, pattern matching, filtering, to actually deliver some insight, or the next step to insight out of that service. It's extremely powerful because we have a SQL language, so very much SQL, as the language in which we write our stream analytics jobs in. And when you compare that to some of the other competing technologies, there's Apache Storm, for example, you're looking at a marked difference in complexity in setting up stream analytics as you are to some of these other pieces.
Yeah, I mean, I've done work with people who have done Storm, that they can take weeks and months to actually set up a viable result for this kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, from a whole Event Hub perspective, we still support Apache Storm, but it's an interesting comparison. To look at stream analytics and its simplicity at the sophisticated things it actually delivers.
You've got exactly the same thing as we did with Event Hub. The setup time is virtually nil.
Yeah.
There's a bit of learning conceptually, I think, around ASA and actually the enhancements that we made to SQL, but in general, it's a very fast learning curve.
So while Event Hub is a release product, Azure Streaming Analytics is still in preview at this point in time. Now, if we look at the Streaming Analytics, we set up the Streaming Analytics environment, but then we're defining jobs that run inside that implementation. Each job has three elements to it. It has an input or a series of inputs. Then it has a query, which we've labelled here as transform, enrich and prepare. That's where we can actually do some stuff with the data. And then we have some outputs. Now, while we're in preview mode, the input and the output elements that are available to us are actually quite a short list. But we do expect more and some very exciting things to be plugged into those two elements as the product moves towards release. From an input perspective, we can take data directly from an Event Hub, or we can take data from Blob Storage. That data might be live stream data, but we also have this category of reference data, where we can actually take reference data from Blob Storage in the preview edition at this moment in time, and use that as part of our transformation or preparation of data in the query operation. Query operations, again, they're built using a SQL language, so it's very familiar to those of us that have used T-SQL for a long period of time. There are some additional elements that you need to get to grips with. The whole idea of a sliding time window particularly does my head in as I try to look about how to apply that to data.
And tumbling windows.
Yeah, tumbling windows. We've got tumbling, hopping and sliding windows, just to be precise, all of which give you a different ability to process the data as it passes through. And then the data is published as an output. It can go to another Event Hub. There's no reason why you can't have this whole architecture chained and duplicated as appropriate. Passing it to another Event Hub gives it the opportunity to prepare maybe other system integrations. So you might fire some alerts that need to be delivered out to another Event Hub, which is then consumed by other systems in your ecosystem that needs to take action.
Or even devices that are actually going to pick up responses like we're talking command and control earlier on.
Absolutely. And then you've also got the option to push it straight into a SQL database. So you can publish it straight to Azure SQL DB. And from there, you might consume it with Power BI, for example, or some other analysis tool or business tool. So let's actually have a look at Streaming Analytics. And let's look at some of those more complex queries as we move through the demo.
So I'm in my management area on Azure, and as you can see, under my Streaming Analytics tab, I've got a whole series of jobs currently built. Let's build a new one. I'm going to say New, Quick Create, define a job title, which I just call Tech Days PDF. I've only got two regions because we're in preview at the moment, so I'm going to go for Western Europe, as I have a storage account set up for the area. Just wait for that to populate and then I can say OK. So we now start getting an actual job being built for us, and once that's completed we can go in and create the three elements of our job. So we get on the dashboard a nice easy five-step element to go, so let's go and create a new input. This is defining the actual source of our data. We can take it from a data stream such as Event Hub, or we can take reference data. In the preview we only take reference data from Blob Storage at the moment. I'm going to choose a data stream, and I'm going to actually go to Event Hub, and I'm just going to quickly set up. First of all, the alias for my particular input. You can think of that alias as the table you're going to query as we move to the query language. I'm going to choose my namespace, and out of the various event hubs, I've got a default one there. And at the moment, under the preview, we have to have the root managed shared access key. That will change. And you'll notice that I'm being warned because I am crossing different regions with my event hub and storage account, which means I will incur some cost for the ingress and outgress of data. I won't worry about that, it's all very low. I can choose from Avro, CSV or JSON. My output is JSON, and I click OK, and that's defining an input stream for me. And once that's done, I could go and add additional input streams, or I can move on and let's jump to the query, and then we'll jump to the output, and then we'll come back to query. So I'm going to add an output. I'm just going to dump it to blob storage, but you can see at the moment we only have three options: blob, storage, event hub, or to a SQL database. So as I mentioned, we can have a chained architecture of event hub and ASA delivering new transformed output to another event hub that might drive further processing, or we can store it into SQL database for further querying, or write it to blob storage for HD Insight to consume, for example. I'm just going to stick it to blob storage for the moment because it's a simpler route, and I'm just going to stick it again in my current subscription, and I have a connected homes, and I'll just say tech days as the prefix for the file name, and we're going to output it as JSON. Okay, so once the connection has been tested, we end up with our output. So now we can move into the query. And the query gives a very simple editor in the web page. Basically, we could select star from our sensor input, which would just deliver the entire message content as enters into the device. But that's without any data schema being applied. So we've got ASA basically inferring a data schema as its definition. So we need to add some data schema. We can do that by actually using a create table statement. So here I've got a create table statement, which will actually go ahead and define the schema for us. It doesn't actually create a table. You can see the various date fields that get added by Event Hub as we move through. You can also see that at the moment it recognises that we don't have a query statement. So I'm just going to correct that. And I'm going to add in a query statement that's going to create for us a whole series of averages and min-max. So we're grouping by what's called a tumbling window. Inside a temporal system like Azure Stream Analytics, it's essential that we understand the progress of time. Every event that flows through the system comes with a timestamp that can be accessed via system.timestamp. So basically every event that's in our system is actually, you know, depicting a point in time. Now if we want to define what that timestamp point in time series is going to be, we can use the timestamp by keywords and actually define the application timestamp. So here I'm using time, which is one of the fields that will come in from the sensor. So that is actually the time the data was logged with our Raspberry Pi Gateway hub, and that will be used as the time inside our tumbling window and as the output into our window end there. So we're doing a group by, and we're grouping by the terminal, the actual sensor, not the Raspberry Pi, but the actual sensor. And we're gathering average max temperatures and then the minimum battery that was obtained through every 10th transmission from the sensor. I can test this by jumping to output. So one of the things that's very easy is if you do a standard query that dumps the output to blob storage, you can then download example files and actually use them in your query executions as you develop your queries. So we're just going to upload that sample input data and it'll actually run it and show us the results inside our window. So as you can see, not every reading has a battery value, but then the battery values appear after a period of time. So you could then go and edit your query, and you could then rerun it if you wanted to. The important thing then is to save your query. And then once you've actually saved the query, you can actually jump back to the dashboard and start your query. So we can actually execute this job and it will continue to run forever. When we go to execute the job, we can choose a start time or a custom point in time. So we can move up and down the durable store of events that have occurred. I can just say start job, and that'll start running. And our job is now essentially running. And we could go ahead and look at the output logs to see what's happening. I'd like to show you an example of an advanced query. So I'm going to jump into this boiler test job that I've already created. With inside the query of ASA, you can actually define a number of temporal data set definitions. So using with, I'm defining first of all an average calculation across my temperature sensors using a hopping window strategy that aligns with the intervals of transmission from the sensors. Then I'm creating a second average that's using a different windowing strategy, a tumbling window for a different period, to end up with another aggregation of temperature data. I'm then creating a third temporal data set, which is doing a very simple differentiation calculation of the difference between those two average values. And I'm ensuring that we're working on appropriate matching sensor transmission averages by using the date diff function to calculate the difference in time for each data point that was calculated. I'm then using a fourth temporal data set, by using the case statement to provide a demonstration of the trend for the temperatures being calculated via the difference variance calculation, to give an indication of whether the temperature is rising or going down. From this, I'm then doing a final little select star, which is actually taking the data out of trend to give us information. So I can say test again, I can go and upload a new data set, and I can just run test on that data set. And as you can see, we end up with a number of rows defining, showing the temperature is declining over a period of time. So between 11 and midnight, as I'd expect, the heating system's off, it's going down. From midnight to 1, it continues to go down. But then as we head into the early part of the day, from 7 o'clock to 8, the temperature starts to rise, and it's going up, as you can see, throughout the day as the heating system actually works. So there we have a very complex statement that gives you an idea of some of the transformation that you can do inside ASA queries. Having all that transformation of data and computation of values is all very good, but how do we actually present and visualize that? Well, here is my very simple Power BI Power View. I'm using the Power BI Designer, which is in preview. Some of the collated data that's come out of the various jobs in ASA enabled me to compute not just the amount of kilowatt hours that my boiler is actually running, but you can also see activity by room, showing the hourly activity score for the rooms in my house that are being managed. That's all summarized just in this table. And then I'm actually using a very simple heat map to show the relationship between the ambient temperature in the room and the heater. And as you can see, in pretty much every room, given it's pretty cold and snowy today, we've actually got most of the area being covered by heating and not by the temperature gauge. We might expect that to be more balanced on a warmer day. So it does give me the opportunity to identify a variety of things, including, of course, that my main bathroom is being heated quite high, and that, given its level of use, is pretty outrageous, and I should turn my thermostatic radiator valve down.
So what have we seen? Well, we've seen basically a wireless sensor web delivering temperature and activity data through to our IoT gateway, which is then delivering the data across the internet through to Event Hub in the cloud, which is ingesting the data and delivering that to Azure Stream Analytics. And Stream Analytics has been doing some aggregation and transformation of the data for us and enabling us to then present that data directly into Power BI. So we can get a variety of dashboards showing a number of real-time insights to how my home is actually working.
Wonderful.
So where can you go next?
Well, Microsoft are actually running a series of data culture events running for the rest of the year. There's a whole variety of tracks on machine learning and big data. I think the finest of all the tracks is the IoT track. As it turns out, that's one we're running. And the next event's in Leeds, coming up in February. Will you be there?
I will certainly be there.
And that'll be great. We've got some live demos, we've got hands-on labs, we've got hardware, so you can have a go with all of the things we've talked about today, and come away being able to do it yourself.
Excellent. Well, Robert, thank you very much for sharing this session with everybody. I hope you've enjoyed it. There are more links available in the slide deck, so do go and look to see how Internet of Things can work in your world.